It was the cold, Garrett said with iron certainty. I saw men freeze last winter, and one before when I was half a boy. Everyone talks about snows 40 feet deep, and how the ice wind comes howling out of the north, but the real enemy is the cold. It steals up on you quieter than will, and at first you shiver and your teeth chatter, and you stamp your feet and dream of mulled wine and nice hot fires. It burns, it does. Nothing burns like the cold. But only for a while. Then it gets inside you and starts to fill you up. And after a while, you don't have the strength to fight it. It's just easier to sit down or go to sleep. They say you don't feel any pain toward the end. First you go weak and drowsy, and everything starts to fade. And then it's like sinking into a sea of warm milk. Peaceful life. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched with the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
Deep.
Boy, was it. I knew I'd find a good
big
one
fan
for this
of warm
week.
Milk.
Yeah.
That's what you took away from it, Zach. It was warm milk.
That was all I heard was warm milk.
You got two words out of the whole thing. You know, honestly, pretty good. Pretty good. Well, boy, we're just all so somber this week. It's tricky to just slide right into the banter here for episode, 399 this week. Woo! Wow, we're almost to that magical 400. So, this week, we're back to Team Westeros. And joining me, of course, I'm your stalwart co-host, Will, sometimes occasionally still known as Kenan. Joining me is a regular Team Westeros member, Mixie, sometimes known as Bob or Robert.
whatever you want to call me.
And part-time
don't
guest
call
host,
me Shirley.
Don't call you what?
Don't call me Shirley.
All right. I'm not going to fall for the airplane jokes. I might call you Leslie now, though.
That works.
Okay.
It's a very R.I.P. managed name.
Yeah, deal. And of course, rounding out the trio this week is a part-time guest host, who I think at this rate is probably about to be upgraded to full-time co-host, judging how this has worked for previous hosts, Zach Brass.
Also part-time warm milk aficionado.
Man.
Didn't know if I mentioned that
yeah,
prior.
Yeah, you know, you really got me thinking about that now. I think I'm going to subscribe to the magazine. Like, can you imagine me, like, sitting down with a cigar in my smoking jacket in the library to read the latest issue of Warm Milk Aficionado?
The cover art's just always somebody with a milk mustache.
Yeah, exactly. boy.
Nothing burns like warm milk.
Oh, somebody got that milk too warm. Too warm.
And this is what we want to upgrade to a full-time host. This right
maybe
here.
Not so much.
Okay. I mean, I know this is your thing, Will, but this might need like a vote.
Yeah.
We got to vote him in.
Somebody's planning on vetoing.
Little do you know, I have the strongest bones of everyone due to the amount of milk that I consume.
Do I want to know how much milk you consume?
Liters a day.
Oh, man. The things Zach does for love of
Hey.
How was that for a segue?
I'll give it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, all right. That's better than I was expecting. Good man. Well then, so we are here this episode chatting, I think, the biggest news to hit Game of Thrones in the past... what, 3 years? 4 years? Damn it, when did Second Ed launch?
I think it's been 3 years.
Okay, 3 years then. There we go. Biggest news since then, and I wish this was all around positive news, but unfortunately it's not. We got a new article announcing a new product titled The Things We Do for Love. This was both the article name and the name of the new product. So let's start, I think, with the upside to the product, and we'll kind of move on from there. So upside is these are new cards that are coming for the game.
Hey-o.
Yeah, there's 88 cards, which evidently the product page breaks down that it's in kind of a weird way because that does not break down to the 3x we're used to. So it's what, 3x of all the draw deck cards, and then 1x of all the plots and the agendas? Which...
yeah, it's one of the plots. I think it's one of the agendas as well.
Yeah, which feels weird. Hopefully all the plots are limit 1 per deck, or I'm going to be really annoyed having to buy doubles of this and wasting all the rest.
Gonna stick it to us one last
exactly.
time.
Oh man, one last time. So let's tackle the fact that there's new cards, and we'll get into that one last time bit in a moment. So the pack itself, The Things We Do for Love, is part of a new thing they're calling, what are they calling this? Premium pack or something. I could have sworn I saw it, and now I've missed it.
Was there a title to it?
Yes, it's just called a premium pack.
Yeah, I thought so. So the premium pack, and it's the size of the clan packs for L5R. So we've got these new cards, and the theme of this premium pack is that it is kind of a greatest hits pack. It is composed completely of cards pulled from the history of the game. We're talking all the way back to the CCG era, back when I was playing. I definitely recognize a couple of these cards up through the first edition. And, well, probably stopping there. I doubt they're reprinting second edition cards already in this, but there we go. It's still pulling from about a little over a decade's worth of prior editions of the game. And boy, are we getting some doozies. in fact, since this mentions that they are powerful and iconic, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say It looks like they're all really strong. Just a highlight reel of some of the most busted stuff we've seen in the past. Whew, so let's start with the card spread then. We've got Karen Hall, the Hatchling's Feast, Mad King Harris, Caitlin Stark, which I believe are mostly all broken down later in the article here, right? So the bottom row, Sky Soul, Wintertime Marauders, and Narrow Escape are only broken down here, I think. They're the ones we can see the full text of. Oh, so let's start with the Sky Cell. Why don't you lay that on us there, Zach? You said you had the article open.
Yeah. It's two cost neutral attachment. It's terminal, House Aaron traded. Forced interrupt when attached character's controller would draw one or more cards, kneel Sky Cell, or kneel attached character, then that player draws one card instead. Attached character gains action, kill this character, cannot be saved.
That phrasing, does that seem weird to anybody else? If they would, the way this is worded, if I'm reading this right, if they would draw one, this forced interrupts to kneel the attached character and then they draw one. Right?
Yes, it's really awkward.
Yeah. Which is...
I don't know if this wouldn't even be good in a Valerian Steel deck. This is definitely one of the lower cards in the totem pole of the greatest hits pack.
Yeah, I think it probably leans that way. This is a card that was popular, give or take, during the tail end of the CCG era when the Aaron stuff was added to the game. Actually, in the next to last set of the CCG, when draw was very prevalent in some houses, very not so prevalent in others, and the houses that did have it tended to have steady, constant kind of drip sources from multiple places. So something like this, which I feel was worded slightly differently at the time. It was maybe draw one less card. I feel like it could hit multiple times during the turn against those houses. But I feel like we're in a different place in second ed. I don't know if I'm feeling this one.
It was a lot more just draw one card effects, and so there's no upside to it because there's not a lot of, there's burst draw, but most of the decent draw is just inside and miscellaneous triggers on locations.
Oh, any thoughts, Bob? Are you just holding out for the next one here, which is probably more up your alley?
I mean, it definitely doesn't wow me. I'm sure there's probably some interaction that is going to happen with it. I just don't know what it is yet. But yeah, it's just, it'll be hard to find room in a deck for that card.
Ooh, you could put it with Dragon's Tale.
There we go.
Isn't Dragon Tale a restricted card? So now I have to use that as my restricted card.
Yes. So true.
That's how you win. You use the best available restricted cards.
It's interesting.
I mean,
I'm going to go no on that one, but
I suppose you do kneel a character every turn after this one, which might have some spot control against some beefy characters, but kneel has, I don't know, not really quite been where folks have wanted it, so we'll see.
Yeah, this is the same thing like on our Baratheon box episode. If this was a better costed Neil, if it costed zero, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, a zero cost would be very spicy.
That's the only way I see that being good.
Okay. Well, how about Greyjoy? This is Bob's bread and butter. So I'm going to read this next one, and then we'll find out if this is potentially worth it. So Wintertime Marauders, it's 4 for 4, military power, it's not loyal, army and ironborn. And while there are more summer plot cards than winter plot cards reveal, Wintertime Marauders cannot be declared as an attacker or defender. Reaction, after you win a challenge in which Wintertime Marauders is participating, if there are more winter plot cards than summer plot cards revealed, choose a non-unique card and discard it from play. Slight just history note before getting into this. The previous version of this first edition, duplicates were cards that could be hit by this. So it saw solid play removing duplicates. And I believe it also maybe had to win unopposed. I forget that part for sure now, but that was one of the key factors was in removing duplicates.
Yeah, I mean, that's very good card. I mean, any card that, you know, removes a card from play, I mean, just seems really good. I do like the Ironborn trait as well. That goes with the army trait. I mean, it's just very solid, efficient card. I mean, the downside is more so the fact that summer plots can just be played in like any deck. And for the most part, winter plots are kind of more thematic to like winter decks. Aside from probably Barring the Gate right now, that's very popular due to Shadows. But I always hate when it's like more, because like that time when you flip your winter plot and they flip their summer plot, now it's not going to do anything. So, and yeah. I just...
Well, at least if you both flip one, like if you flip a winter and they flip a summer, they can still attack. They're just a blank character for that turn, right? But that then makes me think, like you said, summers can just be played like here and there or wherever. But you've really kind of got to go all in on winter. Like, is this realistically triggering what every other turn, give or take?
And I think that was like an issue with the whole winter summer theme in 2.0. And I think, you know, Stark had a lot of cards that kind of was worded that way, like have to have more winter than summer, aside from just having a winter plot out. Like, I wish it was just like, hey, as long as you have a winter plot out, which, I mean, for the most part, they're not, I mean, economy wise, they're always less than summer. Now they might have like a better ability than some of the summer plots, but I mean, 2.0 has always been about economy and getting out your character. So when you could play a Time of Plenty over, you know, any X winter plot, which hardly ever sees play, like Frozen Expanse or whatever these random winter plots are, which I couldn't even tell you what it is, but that one popped in my head.
I think that's actually a location that popped into your head, but it's all good.
One of the two. But there's so many winter plots that are just so bad that never see play. And it's like, because...
Okay, no. That one was a plot.
Was it a really plot? Okay.
Yes, yeah. It's the each character with strength 2 or lower cannot stand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Horrible. Horrible plot. but, like, the winter plots that are being played are just because they're trying to stop, you know, what's going on in the meta right now. So, you know, Barring the Gate and maybe even First Snow Winter, that, you know, another plot that constantly saw some play. I've always kind of liked the trying to do like the winter economy package. It just wasn't as good as At the Gates. So, yeah, it's going to be hard for them to trigger, but when they do, it's going to be really good, you know, just getting rid of stuff all the time.
Yeah. I mean, any non-unique is pretty broad, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, like all their economy
stripping them. Yeah, you could be stripping their economy. You could be knocking the milk of the poppy off of your Victarion, or who knows? There's a lot of possibilities. All All right. We on to the event here. Back to Zach.
Yeah. So it's narrow escape. It's a zero cost neutral event action. Put each character that was killed or discarded into play this phase, or discarded from play this phase, into play from its owner's dead or discard pile. An opponent may discard his or her hand of at least one card to cancel this effect, max one per phase. That seems, as a non-1.0 player, that seems incredibly insanely good.
It's pretty good. I'm having a hard time quite feeling out how this will be in second edition. In first edition, it did wind up getting restricted, and actually it was a CCG card as well, though restricted list didn't exist back at that point.
This just slots, like, every single Tarn deck is going to run this. Every single one.
Yeah, there were a couple different neutral cancels available at the time previously. And of course, it's got the built-in cancel, so there's some options. But there were some plot options to refill your hands afterward. That we don't have quite as well now. But on the other hand, thanks to reserve, hand sizes, I think, definitely tend to be smaller in second edition. So, like, the opportunity cost, so to speak, like the pain of what you're losing is lower if I'm tossing four cards to stop a narrow escape in second edition versus maybe I was, in a bizarre case, tossing seven cards to do it in first ed. Like, I feel like maybe it's more practical to cancel it now. I don't know.
I mean, that does sound right. I mean, that was like an issue, I guess, with I never understood reserve, I guess, in 2.0, or, you know, why it really existed when it's like, here's a bunch of economy, just play all the cards in your hand and don't worry about reserve. So it's all like, when they have these cards that have that kind of out, hey, discard your hand to cancel that. And I'm like, all right, well, that's two cards. I'll discard these two cards. And then I'm going to pop my, you know, gate or whatever it is to, you know, draw some more cards and things along those natures. So, yeah, I mean, the ability just seems very good on that event. Again, it's just all about finding room for that in a deck, especially with whatever else is in the pack. You know, we're kind of at the point where we are going to be at the whole card limit, card pool with the Targ box and now this pack. So it'll be interesting to see how people are fitting in, you know, cards into 60 card decks, especially when there's probably not going to be a rotation now or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, off the top of my head, like, Night's Watch wants this, right? Like, Builders or something swarmy, like, just to almost ensure. I mean, sure, they've already got Craster, but this gives them some other options.
Yeah, like, definitely Night's Watch probably will need a card like that, just because they do kind of get hurt more so by the Valor Morghulis. Since, I mean, I guess most decks that have more non-unique characters are probably liking that card.
That makes sense. And maybe it pushes a return to Minifus. Go ahead, Zach. Sorry.
I mean, maybe. I just the more I look at this, like, I'm blindsided by some of these cards because I just glossed over the article. But I mean, this is just good in, like, any scenario. Just like, it's zero cost, so if you get marched to the wall, like, you can realistically take a turn one setup of like a King Bob, and then just make your opponent march, and then you play this, and like, all right, do I get my Bob back, or do you discard your hand? And it's just like, there's so many good plays with this card.
Oh, man, if these are messing with you, wait till we get to the next few. Jeez Louise.
I'm excited.
Oh, okay. Well, let me lay a little finger on you then. Littlefinger is, of course, neutral and unique. 6 cost, intrigue and power icons. 3 strength, ally and lord. He has stealth. Littlefinger does not kneel when declared as an attacker and interrupt when the effects of an event would initiate. Kneel Littlefinger to cancel those effects. When this Littlefinger was available in first edition, sorry, in the CCG, actually, he affectionately gained the nickname Middlefinger. come to think of it, that might not have been very affectionate. And one thing that strikes me as very interesting here, when they've retooled this for second edition, all that happened was he got 1 gold added to his cost.
Balance.
So he was absurdly efficient and effective in the CCG era, played in every deck. There was no reason not to play him at 5 gold, which was at a time when non-army characters capped at 5 gold. So he was in that scheme at the absolute like top end of the curve, and was considered more than worth it. If a restricted list had existed, he almost certainly would have gone on it. So it kind of boggles my mind to see him only go up 1 gold in our current second edition situation. He's just so efficient, so much cancel. I mean, events are already arguably the worst card type in second ed, and Littlefinger punishes them pretty hard, I think.
Yeah, he definitely seems busted. And again, like you just mentioned, I don't know there's a reason not to play him in a deck. Like, any deck. I mean, so many decks rely on their events right now. And there is that kind of lack of canceling events without, you know, playing Hand's Judgment. And those always seem like they get kicked out of the deck. They're like, you know, I want to play Hand's Judgment. And it's like my 62nd, 63rd card. And I'm all like, well, I just can't play it. And now to have this guy just kind of stick around on the board and be like, all right, I'm going to cancel that one. I'm going to cancel that one. So that just seems unreal. Yeah, yeah. Definitely the cost is like 6 gold's nothing right now.
Yeah, and you're getting 2 challenges out of him with stealth, which means he's, you know, knocking out a character of at least equal size out of contention on the other side of the board. And then you can still use his ability?
Oh. Yeah, that efficiency is just insanity. There's even his low strength, it's completely not even a concern, just because the stealth balances out whatever small downside he has.
He's not even scared of Drakkarin with that low strength. He just laughs at Drakkarin.
Yeah, it's just like, all right, I'll kneel now. Thanks, bro.
Yeah. And now you wasted your burn.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, he could have been 1 strength and still been amazing.
Very possibly, yeah. Man. And, you know, Begging Brothers are already very popular. And it strikes me as interesting here with Littlefinger around. He's going to be so much of an auto-include. I wonder then if that bumps Begging Brother all the way up to auto-include to try to counter your opponent's little fingers and then like counter your opponent's Begging Brothers and all that back and forth. Like, I feel like we might be on the almost to a point of like cancel wars, the likes of which Thrones has never seen.
Yeah, especially with Lannister and their new locations that are going to start canceling stuff. And it's just, yeah, it's just going to be very annoying.
Yeah.
Especially because Drowned God Fanatic was restricted. So.
Yeah. And I mean, and think about how annoyed people got at that cancel available so readily all the time in the meta. I mean, there were other issues with Greyjoy as a whole, but just the feel bad of getting your stuff canceled. Like, with Lanny getting a couple new very strong cancel cards, and now we're getting some more cancel in this pack, there's going to be so much cancel. And like I said, it's cancel, like, which we've never seen. It worries me to see that play out in the meta, because we never dealt with that.
And this new cancel just sticks around also. They're like bodies and locations that it's like every single turn. You know, before it's like, oh, does he have the Drowned God Fanatic in his hand? Oh, does he? And then it's like, you still have to go to a dead pile. Then there's obviously there's a few ways to possibly get them back into your hand, but it's usually that one shot. It's like, oh, I got you that one time. And now this one just like, I'm just going to stick around on the board and just going to cancel all your events like every single turn. And so, yeah, it's just crazy.
In hindsight, the Fanatic seems more balanced than the new Red Keep and the new Littlefinger.
I don't know. The Red Keep is still pretty expensive, but Littlefinger I'll give you for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But the fact that a Lannister deck could have the Bowels, Treachery, Red Keep, Littlefinger, all like in the same deck, like that just says, like, we're doing nothing. Like, no soup for you. Go away.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy.
Well, and then
I almost vomited when you said all those cards.
I mean, add in the next one. Do we go ahead and lay the next card out then?
Yeah. Go ahead and read that one, because I'm sure it has something to do with canceling stuff, right?
It does, actually. It's yet another cancel. Another busted cancel. Zach, I think we're back to you.
Yes. All right. So this is a 3-cost neutral location. It is the third version of Harrenhal. It's contested and Westeros traded. It's got the old-fashioned keyword prized on it, prized 2. And then the text is, if Harrenhal has 3 or more ghost tokens on it, sacrifice it. And then the interrupt is when the effects of a non-plot, non-agenda triggered ability would initiate, kill a character you own and control to cancel those effects. Place a ghost token on Harrenhal once per phase. Boy, howdy, was that a lot of words.
Yeah. And we've got even bigger to unpack. We've got a whole, quote, new, end quote, keyword introduced in this pack and with this card. I say new because it is returning from the tail end of first edition. And I've got to say, I'm even aside from Harrenhal, which I'm sure we'll dive into, I'm not a fan of seeing Prize come back. Like, I feel like it was...
Now, is that the same as it was back in the day? Like the same effect?
Yeah, same effect. When that card leaves play, your opponent opponents, plural, get that much power. It was kind of a retread of a CCG-era effect called Doomed, which added a loss condition to the game, where if you ever had 5 Doomed cards in your dead pile, you lost the game. Yeah, so they would, you know, pump up the power level on cards a lot. And then give it Doomed. They decided, that adding, you know, stapling on a loss condition felt weird. So then in the LCG, they tried out Prized as a way to give that same sort of feel that, you know, you play too many of these, they're strong, but if you play too many, you might just give the game to your opponent. And now in a pack this size, like, I can't possibly imagine we get enough prize cards to hit the like worry point where that's an issue.
I think that's where I was thinking. Like, if you play like 1 or 2 prize cards, it's like, I'm sure the ability and the effects or character location is probably going to be way worth it on your end compared to like, okay, prize 1, there you go, take a power. I just did this for 3 or 4 turns to you, so I could care less.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, and this effect, I think, definitely seems strong enough. I mean, it cancels any ability in play, right? Like, I mean, we need...
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit more cost to it with the killing character, but, I mean, as we've seen in other decks, like, it really hasn't, like, been that big of a deal. I know, like, Drowned God recently was like, oh, okay, I don't care, I'll kill, like, everything I have. And there's so many, like, bodies now that are expendable. You know, you want them early, but even like reducers or any 2-drops and things like that, it's like, all right, they did what they had to do, and now they can, you know, die for the good cause to cancel something, because we love to cancel stuff in this game.
Man, are people still playing reducers though? Legit question. I feel like I never see them.
I still play them.
I feel like they do. I think a few factions can get away without playing them, but
I mean, more often I've dropped down to two, though.
Okay.
And again, that could change also with, you know, Great Halls being on a restricted list. You might try to find economy, you know, in other areas and play the reducers again. So. But yeah, the location just seems very good. Which I have really not much more to say about it besides it seems very good. So.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I've been seeing On the Misty Morn want to come back in multiple decks, and this is just slots right in those decks that run it, kill a dude, and play a one cost event to get all your killed characters back, then kill them again to cancel the next thing.
Yeah. I mean, you can even play Ghost of Harrenhal in it, you know, kill your big dude, pop him right back in next turn.
Yeah, just get attachment control.
Yeah, Harrenhal to Harrenhal.
Yeah, I suppose so. That's actually a possibility.
Just get thematic with it. Go crazy.
Yeah. Well, man, if you can get anything else through, I mean, I guess that particular one, since it's a plot, will probably go through, but man, it's just there's going to be so much cancel that I really kind of worry about being able to get key effects off, which in that case kind of points some of the game back towards, you know, just big dumb dudes, so to speak, right? Just swing sideways your, you know, Robert Baratheon or something and just swing with big dude, get some renown. I guess keywords go up in value since, you know, they can't cancel your inside or your intimidate or something.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing decks that are relying on character abilities, you know, the next, you know, 3 to 4 months, whatever it is, I'd probably highly recommend not relying on a character ability.
I'm only running blank characters with flavor text from now on.
Well, that shouldn't be too hard then. Blank flavor text. There's not that many cards with flavor text these days. Okay. Well, that's another one I'm very worried about. So what do we have next after Harrenhal? The next new one. Oh, Caitlin Stark. This one I'm considerably less worried about. I think this is back to me. She's loyal. 4/4 intrigue and power. House Tully and Lady. An action during an intrigue or power challenge in which you are the defending player, put Caitlin Stark into play from your hand and dealt, participating as a defender. At the end of the phase, if Caitlin Stark is still in play, return her to your hand. I mean, I guess there's two issues here. One, this effect is an artifact of a time when Stark had a much more pronounced intrigue gap than they do at this point in second edition. And she's just up against two other Caitlyns that I think just get chosen every time over her, right? They're just stronger abilities.
I mean, I don't see, like, Fat Cat really played anymore, though. I think those days are over.
Don't tell Zach that.
The other, you know, Cal.
I was waiting for him to finish.
He just needs to hear it. The other Catelyn, core Catelyn, I mean, it's just great because, again, she stops character abilities, so, or just stops abilities in general while she's participating. Yeah, it just seems like it's still, like, very efficient, though. It's like a better version of Dolores Ed. Like, you don't have a faction nail to it. It's two icons. Yeah, I mean, she's really good. Again, I mean, me personally, I'll probably play in core Cat. But
yeah, Corcat, I mean, with Corcat around, you might be able to actually trigger some of your stuff.
She's a good card.
Since she can keep your opponent from triggering stuff. Yeah.
It's weird that she's like just directly competes with Corcat. I think if you're obviously I have a huge affinity for Fat Cat, but I don't see ever picking her over Corcat. I mean, effectively, she's zero cost, but literally, she's in the same cost slot, same icon, same strength. I mean, it's just there's nothing different about her than just the ability. And if I want a efficient ability. I'm going to go with Corcat over her pretty much all the time. Not that this is a bad card, but her biggest drawback is her name, and that's I just don't see her slotting in over Corcat.
Okay. Well then, on to our next one. What else do we have here? Oof, a doozy.
Yes, this is a good one. This one, me? All right, so we've got Mad King Aerys. He's a 5-cost loyal Targaryen card. Intrigue and power icon with 4 strength. King and Lord trait. Prized 1, renowned keywords. The text is, Mad King Aerys cannot be killed unless an opponent controls a Lord or Lady character or Sir Jaime Lannister. Dominance action, Neo Mad King Aerys to choose and kill a Lord or Lady character, limit once per round. This card, again, haven't played 1.0, but holy hell, this card is ridiculously good, and it should be priced like 5. This is insane.
it probably should be. It's another one that basically all it did was gain 1 gold cost.
Yeah, and so it's so odd because 2 packs ago they printed a new Eddard Stark who essentially has almost the same effect, but he costs more, is not loyal, so you can't reduce him with like fealty, and also it's a 3-cost or under character. So I don't know what the hell the thought process was on making him if they planned on releasing Mad King Aerys.
Instead, this guy kills all the big, beefy, like, important characters.
He costs less. He's loyal, which is super beneficial for Targ because fealty's starting to come back. Like, it's insane. It's so good.
Yeah. Now, I mean,
yeah.
Some decks, like, might be able to kill him in the challenge phase, I suppose, while they've got a Lord or Lady. Because his kill isn't till dominance. But, like, if you can protect him somehow, say you have a little finger to stop their, I don't know, put to the sword or something.
Whoa. You think the Targaryens are going to run little finger?
I'm just floating ideas here. Then he lives till dominance so that you can try and trigger him, and then your opponent will kill a small character to Harrenhal. Or they'll kneel their red keep to cancel him or something. I don't know. I'm at such a weird place right now because his power level is just off the charts, but we're also going to have such an absurd amount of cancel floating around that, like, well, you know, is he that crazy overpowered if it takes you 3 turns to get it off?
Like, even without the cancel, though, like, I've been playing a lot of Targ, and I think that their 5-drop spot is a little bit weaker, which is great that they got this. I mean, you know, have Danny that burns, and then Quotho, who's always free. But then, like, they need renown, because sometimes they're just not fast enough. So you're getting a renown. You're getting a very efficient 5-drop, you know, with 4 strength. I mean, I don't even read whatever prized 1 means, because that's just irrelevant.
One ability. Power.
I mean,
sweet.
Whatever that means. We could just, should be like, when he comes to play, I'll just give you a power. Like, here, take a power when he comes to play.
I think I'm going to get this back.
I'm going to go ahead and give it to you now, because I'm going to kill some of your stuff. But even like with, you know, all this cancel that we're speaking of, it's going to come to a point where it's like, there's so many good, efficient characters that have great abilities that an opponent can't cancel everything. And if they want to keep their lords and ladies alive, they have to save their cancel now for this guy. So, that means maybe Drogon's. Now Drogon's coming in, you know, burning people to death and the stuff like that. So,
all the cancels exist, but I mean, there's going to be a moment in the meta where like everyone is running cancels, and so someone's going to be like, well, you know, why don't I just stop? And so it's like, they're going to need to eventually counter the cancels of just running blank shit. And then so there's going to be this window where you just need to keep the cancel people who are playing cancels or not playing cancels, just keep them in check. Because if you slap down Eris, that changes the entire board state. Like, even if he does nothing the entire game, they have to devote every ounce of power they have to prevent this from happening, which is fine, because then you'll just rush away with your other cards.
I can't help but feel that maybe games have just become, like, much more swingy with this type of stuff in the meta. Like, you know, you might hit a balance point if you're lucky, you know, with all the cancels versus some of these other effects. But then I feel like once somebody, like, gets the leg up with one of these, it's just going to really snowball.
I mean, you're probably right on that. But, yeah, the king is pretty amazing, so...
Yeah, also great he card. Has the king trait, which is insane for Targaryen.
Yeah. Hooray, king plot.
Good job, FFG. We like these cards.
Hard,
who wants to watch the world burn?
Yeah, hard to cancel stuff if you can't trigger any of your stuff. Because you don't have the king. Ah, man. Okay. On to our next one. Next new one. Oh, hey.
There is more cards?
There are more! It's madness. There's...
Man.
There are two agendas that we got spoiled as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the first one is a return of a fan favorite. First Ed, Dark Wings, Dark Words. This is Corey Faraday's Melee Champ card from 2011. It says your minimum deck size is 75 cards. Cannot include more than one copy of each event by title in your deck. And reaction after you play an event, draw one card, limit three times per round. This was a very, very strong option in the past, where a lot of agendas in First Ed offered you card advantage of some kind. This is largely something we have not seen in second edition. So on the one hand, I can't help but think that a draw agenda is going to offer some power levels way, way up there. But on the other hand, with all of these cancels and things floating around, you know, if you ever happen to like need one of those events to go off at a key time, I can't help but think it's just going to get canceled. And, well, you only had the one copy of it, so enjoy the card you drew, you know, move on.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting that, I mean, this agenda was reprinted, especially with, like, Littlefinger, which is, you know, the card that just says, I'm going to screw over this agenda. Yeah. Was it the same thing as
yes.
75 yeah, cards yeah, yeah. in the past? Okay. I mean, we could think We're very thankful that a combo doesn't exist, because I mean they would love this, right? With their all their events they want to play, and
well, but you can only play one copy of each event by title.
One of each, okay.
Yeah, so that's why I was saying something like Littlefinger. Really, like if you happen to need that event at that moment, well, that's your one shot. You won't get it again. I mean, sure,
yeah,
there's
I feel like
effects to get it back, but. Like, those are not...
I feel like Valyrian Steel is probably going to be more dependable with their card draw and probably more efficient because there are probably more attachments that are one-ofs, and most events you're probably wanting 2x or 3x if they're, like, a really good event.
I mean, in a general sense, aren't attachments probably just better than events in second ed?
I don't know that I agree with that.
I mean, I thought that I'd probably see like more weapons and stuff like that in this game, and there really wasn't a whole lot of weapons and, you know, things along that line. Attachments can stick around a little bit better, just because there's not a whole lot of attachment removal. I mean, their events are probably going to win games, and attachments aren't necessarily going to win you a game, I don't think. And so that's what maybe where events are a little bit, have an edge up on attachments, in my opinion there. But in regards to just the two agendas, looking at them, I think Valyrian Steel is probably better just from reading and without like even thinking of a deck right now, but just seems like it would be more efficient.
So, I mean, I think Valyrian Steel is certainly a more flexible agenda, but I personally think Dark Wings is the better of the two. I mean, just there's a lot more card draw events. And so, like, just in multiple houses, there's cards that just draw you cards. And so when you play those, you theoretically get a couple cards for the price of, you know, 0 to 1 gold is typically the draw card event slot. And then, I mean, it's just... I've mentioned this to Will in private. I mean, Tyrell seems like the natural slot for this agenda just because they have so many different ways to interact with played events or scrying for events or discounting their events. And just they have so much card draw to begin with. I mean, that just with 75 cards, they'll still probably outdraw somebody with the events that you can run with them, and you're just finding your rush quicker. I definitely think this is a better agenda, but not a more flexible agenda than okay. Valyrian Steel.
I mean, I think this is a good one to play around with. That I think, it's going to be interesting and kind of make people fiddle with some different types of builds, or at least different cards than they would have normally, but I'm not necessarily worried about this agenda being busted, thankfully. Uh-oh. Bob doesn't agree. I heard that laugh. Yeah. Sure you do. We'll see.
I mean,
we'll see.
I agree with everything you say, Will, all the time.
That's false.
It's not up against many draw agendas, but it is up against at least one other draw agenda in this pack. Valyrian Steel comparisons earlier aside, it's also up against the Long Voyage, which I think puts us back to Zach, right?
Yes. As you said, the Long Voyage, your minimum deck size is 100 cards. Reaction after you draw cards in the draw phase, kneel your faction card to draw one card. This seems like hot garbage. 100 cards is a lot of cards.
Yeah, it really is.
It's garbage. Maybe without a faction kneel, I don't know.
Make it 2 or 3 cards. Also, how are you going to, like, isn't there an actual rule in the tournament FAQ that you have to be able to shuffle your deck, otherwise you can't play the deck?
Yes, yeah, you have to be able to shuffle it.
So you run this agenda, there's a 50-50 shot, you lose.
Wow, are you that bad at shuffling?
Honest to God, yes. I throw cards everywhere when I shuffle.
Didn't you ever play like Magic the Gathering Commander?
Oh no, I can't play it just out of pure dexterity. I'm good at cards, but I'm not very agile with my hands.
Plus, Commander is 99 cards. It's that 100th card that puts it over the top.
Oh yeah, especially if you're like triple sleeving it, then you're like, there's no telling.
Oh. I mean, I guess you're
protecting
your LCG investment if you triple sleeve.
But value is only going to go up with this announcement that we're going to make after these packs.
Yeah.
I don't think there's really much to say about that agenda. I mean,
it is hot, hot garbage.
Man, 100 cards. Wow.
Yeah. I just...
Why?
Just can't see that.
If it was 75... It'd be so great at 75.
Well, at 75, then it's just like maybe not strictly better than Dark Wings, but it's close. I don't know. It would be a much closer comparison anyway. anyway. But still.
Yeah, it would definitely be something you could use. As of how it's printed, if you're using this, you're actively deciding you want to lose whatever game you're playing.
Well, you know, there's no accounting for taste. Maybe we can get Bob to make a 600 bet on that one. Somebody wins a long voyage.
Oh, yeah. The same, the white book bet. We'll go
in with Bob on that bet. Bob can buy you dinner and I'll buy you dessert.
This is getting pretty tasty, folks.
I picked dessert because it'll be like a McFlurry.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so that's all our new cards. We're ending on a kind of a downer with the cards, and you know, we're moving on to more downers here with the rest of the article, because the rest of the article, after, you know, slamming all these new cards on us and announcing a change in pack like distribution for the game, also announces that the World Championship in February is the end of Fantasy Flight organized play for the game. Boom, boom, boom. Mm. So.
Yeah, so like we all kind of had that feeling that the game was, you know, going to be towards an end. It still kind of sucks, though, when you actually finally get the news. You know, it's like we knew it was coming. Like, I knew it was going to happen. Or, you know, you just know. Like, yeah. I mean, everyone just kind of knew, right? Maybe a couple of people kind of thinking, oh, yeah, mommy and daddy can stick together. I know they can. And then it's like, sorry. Daddy's out, you know? But
how could you make this worse than what it was?
That easy.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta get rid of that false hope. Like, it's just not working out, you know. I felt like, I mean, parts of it felt a little misleading. I hate that they, you know, mentioned like packs, you know, like plural. I understand from probably a business perspective that they want to make sure people are buying, you know, the last two products, and you know, kind of leaving it out there, like, you know, maybe we'll do something again.
That's worth exploring. I mean,
it may have been easier if it was just like a clear.
Because they specifically mentioned.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Where is it? There we go. The release model for this game is changing from cycles of monthly chapter packs to larger premium packs, released at more sporadic intervals. And I just keep reading and rereading that sentence. And I think to myself, if you've come to the business point where you've already made this decision, you've already prepped this new product, you've play tested this product, you've, you know, I'm sure have sent it to printing by now, if you've already announced it, and you're announcing this product, like, surely, if you are going to continue to produce stuff, you know what release interval you're looking at, right? Like, sure, maybe you're like, you know, hey, monthly chapter packs was just too much. We're going to dial the game back. We're going to go down to quarterly premium packs, or, you know, semi-annually premium packs, or whatever it is. If you're going to do it, you know at this point. You're not throwing this out and then kind of hoping, like, maybe, you know, in a couple years we'll see how we feel. Like, that's not how you run a business. Phrasing something as released at sporadic intervals, however, does read about how you do kind of like bad PR spin to try and leave hope, but it's obvious there isn't hope.
Yeah, it's such a and the fact that you're announcing that,
yeah, ending with a whimper, not a bang. I mean,
yeah, especially when you announce that OP is officially done with it. So even if it is like a pack, let's say best case scenario, they're like, let's do a pack like in the end of summer or something like that. But now it's like, well, there's no, you know, organized play support for it or anything along those lines. There's probably not going to be any official, you know, tournament or anything like that. So now we're just randomly, just sporadically, you know, printing out packs that probably aren't even being playtested by players anymore, you know, just because they probably are, that bridge is probably burned down now. So, so yeah, he has like some random cards if you guys are still playing.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense.
And they even mentioned this, like, comprehensive insert with a letter to fans from lead designer Nate French and a look at the game's rich history and so on. And like, that's not something you do if you're planning more products.
That sounds like an end. Yeah,
that is definitely a send off. You do that when you're sending off. Like,
yeah. And I know, like, they mentioned, you know, well, if, you know, George R. R. Martin, you know, prints out his next book, we'll look into, you know, another cycle and things like that. And I mean, hard telling when that would ever be. And then you'll have to read the book, then you'll have to, you know, design cards from the book and play test those cards.
Right.
And by that time, your contract with George R. R. Martin is probably up. So it's like,
Well, or even like player base at that point. Do you have a player base in 2 years without official support? Do you have a player base like raring to buy that new cycle based on Winds of Winter whenever you finally decide to print a product or whatever? Like, probably not.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this is just going down to like the way they're wording things. I mean, clearly they have no public relations market or anything like that. They just cannot. I don't know why they just can't be honest with, you know, things like this. Even going back to the whole what was I going to talk about that bothered me? How they talked about how they have like no more cards to, you know, create along those lines.
We've done everything we can.
Yes.
You know what? If they would have just been honest, like here's what I would have said. You know, we've had the license now since whatever, 2002, 2003 or something like that. You know, maybe we're just...
02 was the first release, yeah. So they probably had the license since,
but
01.
If they would have just came out and said, you know, we've been making this game for like the last 15 plus years. You know, to be honest, you know, we're just, you know, burnt out. You know, we've done to 1.0, we've done to 2.0. You know, as a company, we have so many other, you know, opportunities. We have Marvels and we have other ideas that we want to invest, you know, our staff and resources into. So for that reason, we're, you know, no longer going to produce a Game of Thrones. We've had a great, you know, run of 15 plus years, but now it's over. I just don't think there's another character that we can possibly create. You know, it's like, really, guys, just be honest, you know. Marvel is probably a lot more lucrative than a Game of Thrones right now. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and you don't even have to say that. You don't have to be that on. But like this bizarre, like wheedling. Yeah, we're done. But like, kind of not. But yeah, we're done. We're done. Well, no, we're done.
It's just there's like there's no like. Like honor in it, like at all. They're just like, it's not our fault. Like, we're doing as much as we can. George R. R. Martin, he's not giving us any material. Blah 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 blah. We're tapped out on everything we can do. But again, like, we're gonna keep releasing product, but like, we have to wait for George R. R. Martin to do it. So if you guys are mad at the game's ending,
yeah,
it's totally his fault. It's not
blame
ours.
I mean, I would have even taken something that said, "Hey guys, you know." Like, this has been a great game. We've published for 15 years, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's been a good, great run, so on and so forth. But, like, it just doesn't meet our sales goals anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I can understand and buy that. I'm not happy about it. But, like, it is a legitimate reason to say, hey, it's just not fiscally viable for us. And that is the type of thing that they have announced in the past. Like, they used to be that kind of honest, like, a decade or so ago, right? Like, that happened when when Cthulhu ended and when Throne CCG got converted to an LCG, like that was part of the stuff they talked about. It was a very forthcoming letter from Christian Peterson. I mean, those of us passionate about the game were up in arms about this, that, and the other at the time because, you know, things were changing and with our beloved game, but like nobody could naysay that type of phrasing, right? Like that's a legit reason.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of, you know, all adults. We can handle it. Just tell us the truth. Let us know that mommy and daddy don't love each other anymore. I mean, it's not me. I'm not the reason. It's not my fault. You know,
though, thinking about that sort of thing, sort of, at least kind of some of the back and forth nature of this article that makes it in some ways kind of hard to parse. There's another line here that either I missed last week whenever this article went up, or it was added later. I haven't gone to like dig back through the Wayback Machine to double check whether this was added after the fact. It is entirely possible I missed it. But I notice right underneath the picture of Eddard here, it says, "While these are the last events we have planned for the game, it's entirely possible that it could receive more support in the future, such as at select fan events. If that happens, we will be sure to announce it." Which is...
I don't recall ever reading that.
Yeah, I feel like it wasn't there, but I'm not sure.
I thought it was, because when I read that also stuck out to me as like, hey, game, we're going to kill it, but like if you guys keep it going, that's totally cool. We'll pretend to help you guys out. Like, it was definitely a weird... It's just so odd that they're just so non-committal about this.
Yeah. I'm like, what does this mean? Entirely possible it could receive more support in the future. So does that mean FFG might decide to, you know, print a pile of stuff, you know, like the equivalent they would have done for like Continentals, and say like, hey, you know what? There's a fan run tournament at Gen Con. Here you go. We will dump prizes on you. Go ahead and have fun with these alternate art cards or whatever. Give them out. Like,
so it could just be like their extra stock. That's most likely what it would be.
But at the same time, I feel like it would also be kind of shitty for them to have, like, you know, some of these world champs and card designs that never got printed. I feel like that'd be shitty if they, like, sorry, Will, but if they didn't, like, have these cards produced, you know, to some capacity.
Yeah.
Maybe. For, like, the people that have earned those cards in the past. Because from... I don't know how many champ cards are actually going to be in this new release, but I feel like there's still a dozen or so that of recent champs that have never got, you know, printed or created yet.
Yeah, that, something like that.
And even like the Targ box, I don't remember seeing any champ cards out of the box either. So
off the top of my head, I don't remember any.
Yeah. So hopefully they do reach out to, like, you know, those people who probably actually put some time in designing their own card to actually be able to get that. Even if it's just like, you know, hey, here's like a dozen for you that you can have, you know, whatever. I wish maybe a dozen seems low, but...
They did do that with the... let's see, which game was that they did it with? The last Cthulhu champion, I think, if I remember correctly. They did a POD print run for him of... I don't remember now what it was, you know, 100 cards or whatever, and shipped them to him and basically just said, okay, do whatever you want. Here's your card. So that's theoretically possible in Thrones, but I don't know. I just keep reading this passage, and, you know, and it says select fan events, which makes it sound like they are actively going to be looking at the fan events. I'm looking at you,
Solik. Yeah, I mean, like Solik, maybe like Red Saturday, you know, some of the premier events that have been, you know, going on for a while, first player championship even, you know, just.
Way to not mention the host.
I mean, I was just thinking of prestigious fan run events. That's all. And that one just popped in my head.
Yeah. Just poof.
Good. Yeah, I do hope that they do have like some targeted, you know, events that they're probably looking at for like these maybe random prizes or whatever they have in. I mean, it sounds like they have a plan, but they probably don't because they never have a plan. But
yeah, it feels like it. But it says we'll be sure to to announce it. So yeah, I don't know. It
which
feels
odd.
It feels like they're planning like unofficial official support. I don't know.
I mean, this is just like when you're in that relationship with that girl and then you cut it off. And then like 6 weeks down the road, you're like, man, I know if I call her, I can, you know, get what I need. Yeah.
It's like 1 a.m. and you're drunk.
But I know.
And you're like, hey, you up?
But I know if I do it.
That text message.
So far, Bob has mentioned divorce twice and a breakup for like a long lost lover.
I mean, just trying to, you know, appeal to everyone. You know, maybe some people have gone through something like this, right?
But you haven't appealed to the happily married people.
Yeah, forget those guys.
Hey, we're about to get there. We're about to get there. In fact, I could just transition it to.
All right, what's next?
Well, hey, that is literally the question, right? What's next? And we don't want to leave the show here on a completely sour note, because a couple hours after this article from FFG went up, a post was put up by Chris Schoenthal that was brought to you by a small group that I was also a part of, that basically wants to function as a steering committee, just a temporary organization for the moment, just to oversee putting together a full-on players committee, council, Nisei organization type thing, if you're familiar with what Netrunner did. Something that would be in charge of continuing to maintain and run the game going forward, from, you know, organizing the type of organized play that we're used to, store championships, regionals, and so on, you know, providing prizes for it, that sort of thing, all the way up to ideally working out some sort of system to produce new cards to keep going. So I don't know exactly what form everything will take, but there is a Google form that you can go sign up on. And offer your volunteer services if you want to be a part of things, particularly if you have skills on one of these fronts that you think would be useful. And then things will kind of be put together from there. So I, again, want to really acknowledge that this starter group was not ever intended to be the committee and to just stop there. It was only intended as kind of a brainstorming session from some of the most dedicated people in Throne, shall we say. So I think there's still a kind of a bit of a silver lining here from, you know, all these people that are so committed to this relationship that we have as a community. See, there you go, Zach. There's your marriage aspect. So
yeah, no, I think it was great. I do think it was, something that was probably been in the works for, some time being now, because it does seem like the first initial stages were well organized. That Google Doc, was pretty specific with, hey, we want anyone to help, no matter who it is. If you, have any input, we can definitely find, some type of position, quote unquote, that you can help, bring Scape along. Because it really is going to take, the whole community. It's not going to be just, 12 or so people that do this. I mean, it's going to take a lot of people and it's going to take a lot of work to keep this game going, which it does sound like we have a lot of passionate fans of, Westeros and of the game. So it does appear that this is in a good direction. And I think that's something that can keep the game going for, a while.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think some like loss, some kind of bleed out is inevitable with FFG ending official support, right? But on the flip side, like turnout and like kind of tournament participation, I think has been on a real upswing this year. I'm not looking at hard numbers here, but like aggregate probably the best since launch year, right? Like, sure, yeah. Events like, say, Gen Con's tournament, yes, is still strictly smaller than it was at launch year and that sort of thing, right? Tournaments continue to kind of dwindle down, but I feel like we've seen the tournaments taken an uptick over the last year, right? Tournaments like War and the Name Day tournament and U.S. Nationals, which I'll be honest, has basically become a community-run event for the last 2 years, like have only been growing and seeing crazy numbers, right? Name Day saw over 100 people in the middle of nowhere. We almost broke 80 here for U.S. Nationals in Springfield, and like I think that bodes well for a player run organized play program when all of the player run stuff for at least the last year has been doing as well or better than the official stuff anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with that.
Yeah.
I mean, we still get what month is this, October? So we still got prime season, getting ready to kick off. You got Red Saturday, you got Iowa Worlds. We still got, Worlds in February. So, I mean, there's still a lot of, tournaments coming up now. And the Targaryen box, there's a lot to, kind of look forward to in regards to the game. And now it's just going to be a matter of, what we as a community can do to, keep that game going. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it came at a really good time. It's prepared ahead of time. I mean, the quote unquote death isn't happening until, late February. And so, I mean, this definitely seems like it'll be instilled and ready to go as soon as the, again, quote unquote death happens.
Yeah, I for one look forward to the next few months to see how things shape up. I mean, if we can put things together to the level that the Nisei group has for Netrunner, and I have every confidence that we have talented people in Thrones to do it. Like, I don't know if you've looked at their stuff, but it's very, very solid, very impressive from a quality, like, design and graphic design standpoint. They're still doing, promos and regionals and, counters and alternate art runners and things.
And right now, like, a Game of Thrones is probably similar to Netrunner when it ended up, being terminated. Like, the same kind of play, wasn't it probably a similar amount of people playing Netrunner that there is now in the Game of Thrones? I never played Netrunner, but...
I would hazard a guess similar, maybe a bit more in the States that showed up for, Gen Con and that sort of thing. but I feel like we tend to get a little bit more than they did in Europe, like, because we had things like Stalik. So, yeah, similar, maybe a little bigger.
Okay. Hey, there's hope.
Yeah. Heck, they just had their first world championship after their end, I think, in Europe. And I want to say someone told me it was over 200. So,
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, it was like 215 or something like that.
So, yeah, I guess, you know, the white book is here to stay for the foreseeable future. So, despite some downer in the middle of the episode here, there's more cards coming and good things still to be had in the future. So stick around and enjoy the red.
Such as warm milk.
All the warm milk.
Brought it back.
Wow.
Wow. I'm going to go to props and slops now, though after Zach bringing that warm milk up again, I'm tempted to say we should be in the danger zone, but...
Yeah. It's the third. You're doing this on purpose now. This is the third episode with a Kenny Rogers throwback. Wait, did I say Rogers?
Yeah, you mean Loggins? Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
I love Kenny Rogers.
I heard myself say.
Yeah. You got to know when to hold.
As soon as I said it, I was like, that doesn't sound correct.
Know when to fold them.
Yeah, we knew where you were going with that.
No when to walk away.
You're going to do the whole song?
No when to run. Okay, now I'm done.
I was just planning on being quiet and hoping it stopped.
I was really hoping you were going to just double down on it and do the entire song.
That would have been pretty wicked. Maybe next time. But in the meantime, I'm going to open with some slops. Slops to Zach. Everyone like him that does not understand how to use quotes when speaking out loud. Quote unquote is not a thing. It doesn't exist. It is quote, say the thing, end quote. End as in it is finished. Quoting and then unquoting without anything in between it. A doesn't make sense and B unquote doesn't exist.
I will have you know, you're being quote-unquote rude right now.
I choose not to acknowledge such things from, quote, people, end quote, like you.
Unquote. You think you wanted to fit? It's like when you're talking on a radio and you say Roger, you need to say unquote so you know when you're done.
But you said it before you even said the thing. So it's like, Roger, over.
Well, yes. you know, in my defense, I was quote-unquote raised in New York State, and it's a little backwards there.
Well, I'm glad somebody finally admitted it.
I didn't say I was backwards. I said New York State.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I knew what you meant. I'm glad somebody finally admitted it.
Oh, yeah.
I have no slops this week. I will prop the community, though, the Game of Thrones community. I was thinking that after this announcement, there was going to be dozens of people selling off their collections on the trade side, and I think I only saw a couple. So I was expecting more. You know, so, I mean, it does feel like, you know, people are going to ride this out and see what the community can offer, you know, in that next stage of life. So Definitely props to the community. For the most part, I think everyone was kind of positive, you know, more positives than negatives about the announcement. Like I said before, it sounded like everyone kind of thought this could happen, and it did happen, which doesn't make it, you know, better. But the fact that we have, you know, some plans in place definitely helps out the community, and I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, I think it's been taken very well.
I don't think I have any. Yeah, it's like, as I said earlier, I mean, with it happening so early, being able to take over as soon as the wait for it, quote unquote death happens will be pretty great.
Yeah, you're rethinking this whole host thing now, aren't you, Will?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy. Well, I will also throw in some props to Downton Abbey. I will admit we have not gone to see the movie yet, though I've heard a lot of positive things. But we did finally get off our asses and finish the TV series, which, of course, was just lovely. If maybe a little rushed in the last. So I look forward to seeing that. It is a soothing balm upon my soul after the horrors that is modern life.
When I want to watch a TV show, the main categories I look for is how much of a soothing balm it is, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Okay, then.
I'll throw some props to the Sony. They released an update this morning, actually, to date the podcast when it's recording, that you can now cast your screen to your Android phone. It used to be only on Xperia and iPhone devices. So now, when I'm having a super unproductive day at work, I can just connect my controller to my phone and play on my lunch break.
Wow. Mm. Aren't you fancy?
Yeah, it is. It is not great for my productivity, but it'll be good for me mentally.
It will be good for you personally.
Yes.
Well, I think that's all I got this week.
Yeah, I don't have any slops. I'm a lot more optimistic than you are, Will.
Well, okay then. I guess that's us just wandering into the danger zone.
Highway to the danger zone.
That closes this chapter of the White Book.